So welcome everybody to the ninth session of the Mastery Group. I want to talk briefly, because Sarah Jane says, well, I'm not going to attend the call if it's all we're going to talk about our support system. And, I'm trying to figure, the whole idea of this is that people would be reporting in and telling me how they did. And we have seven questions or whatever. Generally, people ask two questions with three words. And it doesn't convey a heck of a lot. Some people do more. Some people did a lot more in the past and aren't doing so much in the future. I don't know if it's adding any value right now. And I'm trying to think of things we could do. In the first groups that I used to do years ago, we used to do Google groups. That was pre-Facebook groups. Might have even been pre-Facebook. It was a long time ago. And so if we had a question or wanted to share something, or if I wanted to share something to the group, I simply send it an email and went to everybody's email box. Now, I don't even know if Google Groups exist as an entity like they used to, because it was replaced by other
companies. No, they're gone.
They're actually gone.
There's Yahoo Groups, but not Google anymore.
Yeah, well,
Google now has Hangouts.
Google Hangouts. Yeah. So I don't know if anyone has a preference or something that really works well. I found that the Facebook groups are really good for conversation. They're really good. But they're not perfect. There isn't anything perfect out there. I have tried so many different forums that were absolute duds for my club. I mean, nobody posted anything on them. I tried so many. And I finally went to Facebook groups, and we actually started to get some interaction and questions, and they've been 10 times better than anything else up to that point. But does anyone else have experience with Google Hangouts? No? Yes? Comments? Ideas?
So I have a comment.
Yeah.
The comment is the purpose and thrust behind the action finishing system is actually a proven idea. When people indicate what they have accomplished on a daily basis and plan what they're going to do tomorrow, e.g. on a daily basis in terms of their marketing, etc., it does help keep people on track. So again, the thrust and purpose is a good one. I think that, however, you are also talking about you want two different things to happen.
Yeah.
One is the reporting system, and the other is a conversation.
Yeah.
And maybe the reality is it's not a good idea to combine those two purposes into one vehicle. I think the reality is we all have each other's email addresses, so if we want to, we can contact somebody in the group to ask a question or make a comment.
Right.
My second comment is that in the finishing system now, if somebody has a comment or a question or they're stuck and they need you need, therefore, to look at this every single night, because, three or four days later or a week is punishing for somebody to indicate their question or stuckness.
Yeah, I agree, and I plead guilty. The last couple of weeks have been, I've slipped on it.
And I would say
My last comment to everybody, because I had already sent this to Robert, is to cut down on the number of questions and not have the questions be open-ended and to be closed-ended. By way of example, the first item might be list up to three marketing accomplishments that you realize today. I'm finished talking.
Okay. Sarah Jane, that's really useful feedback.
Yes.
Because I'm new in using this thing, you know, how it was designed is a little bit different than we're using. It's for people that are working, ultimately it was designed for people working on their dissertation to just make a little bit of progress every single day. Ours is, you know, much more complex than that.
And I would say for me, it's duplicative.
Oh, explain that.
You know, I have my own systems in place already for tracking what I'm doing.
Yeah.
So now I got to go and take what's in my systems already and put it online. I don't really find a lot of value in that is the thing for me. What I do find value in is the second part that Sarah Jane was talking about is about having the conversation with people. That I'm interested in. And I'll put my two cents in about Facebook. I'm not a Facebook person. I don't know. Every time I put my hands on it, something goes wrong. ICFDC has a closed Facebook group. I can't get in it anymore. Nobody can help me figure out why. And I'm not a technical neophyte or anything, you know? I don't know what the problem is. But so those are just my two cents on Facebook.
Yeah.
Has anybody used LinkedIn closed groups? I just think we're a professional group. Maybe we need to think about ourselves on LinkedIn instead of Facebook.
I'm having trouble hearing everybody.
Yeah, we can't hear you too well, Roberta, for who knows what reason. I don't know.
I don't think I'm not muted. You can't hear me.
Just keep talking. It goes in and out.
Okay, so I just thought that my thought is that we try LinkedIn because we're a professional group and Facebook is kind of more social, even though people use it for a lot of business. Is just to, has anybody done that for a discussion group?
The thing about LinkedIn is it's a threaded conversation where Facebook, conversations drop off Facebook really fast. I have one group that does Facebook well, but there are 600 people in that group. And I have another group with a similar theme where there's only 40 people and there's not enough going on. Facebook drives me nuts because I can't go back and track a conversation. It just disappears really, really fast. Where on LinkedIn, I can track the conversations because they have topics and, you know, I can go back and if somebody says, well, I need help with this and I'm having problem with the same thing, I can go in and read the thread.
Yeah.
That's not in Facebook. I have a group for people who are non-visualizers, and every time somebody publishes an article, we get another bunch of, you know, the same questions come in again.
Yeah. Oh yeah, sure.
So let me ask you a sort of the basic question. The purpose of the support system was to basically track your progress. As Leanne says, well, I don't really need that, et cetera, et cetera. I think it's valuable in a lot of ways, nevertheless. So track your progress. The other is more to have conversations and explore an idea, which we can all get into as much or as little as we want. So who put up your hand if it's more important for you to track your progress? Put up your hand. Okay, so it looks like...
You're comparing apples and oranges there, Robert. I can't say which is more important. I can say it's important for me to track my progress.
Yes. Well,
but I can't tell you if it's more or less important.
Yeah. You know, a lot of the tracking of progress I'm doing with clients is I'm meeting one-to-one. What have you done? You fill out your report every week. I know the activities you've done. You know, that helps me. And it's, you know, it's pretty simple to do. Most people fill that out every time, et cetera. But what I'm missing, see, it's kind of a one-way communication. I write emails to you once a week or so, but I could have, you know, I could have other topics. We could have more of a discussion about such and such. Let's have a discussion about what we're talking about today. And then that would be, you know, here's something I'm struggling with the selling process. Oh, yes, blah, blah, blah. I think that's richer and ultimately more valuable. And here's how much I did today. So is there's some agreement on that? Yes. More agreement than the other thing.
So why can't we just do that via the group email?
Well, we have to have a thing where I guess you could send the email back to everybody.
Yeah.
There's got to be an email system that replaced Google Groups.
It's called Yahoo Groups replaced it. But my email I get too much, and I would have trouble, like on a threaded forum, I can track a conversation and see all the different people inputting to it. On an email, I can't do that unless the email gets miles long. If it's a quick question and everybody respond, that's great. If it's an actual conversation, I don't find email helpful.
Yeah, I see what you say. So is everybody on LinkedIn already? Yes. Is anyone not on LinkedIn? You're not on LinkedIn, Ido? Well, you can get on LinkedIn free and fast. You don't have to worry about a perfect profile.
No.
But you can get on it easily. Everyone else is on LinkedIn? Oliver, Roberta?
Yes, I'm on LinkedIn.
Okay. So why don't we try that? I think you make really good points, Sharon. The threaded conversation can be more substantial. It can go on longer. You know, I've been on a jazz forum for 10 years. Conversations that were there 10 years ago that are still there. You don't lose them.
On LinkedIn, you've been on a jazz forum for 10 years?
No, it's a threaded forum. It's not LinkedIn.
Got it.
So are you saying then that that we don't have to fill out the finishing agent anymore?
I'm okay to retire it if you're okay.
So, Robert, are you aware that there is a threaded forum as part of the action plan? There's a foreign space there that we're not using.
Blinding flash of the forgetfulness. Yeah, that's true. There is a forum there. Let me look into it.
We do have a private forum that will do everything you want LinkedIn to do without requiring anything.
That's true. Okay, let me look into that and see if that's a simpler solution. After all, we have the same URL we have to go to. It's simply a different button we have to press.
Just click on forum, and so then those who find action plan, I mean, there's a piece around sort of, I have to post onto that that's helpful, but I can't keep track of conversations on there. Anyway, the forum does exist on action plan.
My question about that, and I don't know the answer, would be, do I have to sign in to access it, or will it send me the note? Like in LinkedIn, it'll send it to me. I don't
That's
have
a good
to
question. I don't
the
know.
Extra step.
I'll find out.
Hey, welcome.
Thank you. Sorry I'm late.
There she is. You missed our whole conversation about forums and support groups and all that stuff. And we've got
that's probably on purpose.
And we have to move on.
Okay.
But we're going to explore the forum aspect of the finish agent. Okay. Very useful, Sharon. Thank you. No, I do experimental things, and sometimes the experiment fails, and sometimes it doesn't. Okay. So today, getting into our topic of the day, interactive topic is converting prospects into paying clients, the selling process. Now, there's so many subtleties of the selling process that it can sometimes be hard to get a handle on it. And a lot of people, when you're learning something, we want to know the right way to do it. Can I use this exact procedure? Well, the truth is everybody is in a different place with different kinds of clients in different situations, but there are certain things that I've discovered are pretty good constants that you can say, okay, that almost always works. And that, on the other hand, almost always doesn't work. And then there's a whole vast number of things that are, you know, are gray areas and that can be fine-tuned and customized for your situation. So the whole first part of this is you have to have some kind of marketing activities, which you're all working on to some degree, from networking, website, other online content where people discover you and respond to you, speaking, presentations, direct outreach, email marketing, et cetera, something that generates a lead. So here's the first mistake that I see people make, is we're very passive about leads. So for instance, we go to a networking group and we collect cards. We give a talk, and if you use my strategies for that and fine tune that, you'll often end up with a big handful of cards. If people can sometimes respond to your website or fill out a form or something, and of course they can call and leave a message to you, etc., whatever it is. But the majority of people, and I'm working with hundreds and hundreds of people, get cards, say, at a networking event, and almost always do nothing with them. It's more the rule than the exception. So the whole purpose of marketing is to, actually, I want to be very specific about this. The purpose of marketing is, I've written about this many times, I just want to hear it back from you. What is the purpose of marketing? If you don't understand this, marketing becomes very hard. Nancy, what is the purpose of marketing?
I would say to increase sales, to make more money.
Good try, but in my system, that is not the purpose of marketing.
To generate interest.
That's only halfway there.
To get to home plate.
No.
Telling others about how you can help them. Telling others how you can help them.
Telling others how you can help them. No, that's just a subset of marketing. That's a subset. So we've gone all the way from a small subset to Mary Jane's, Sarah Jane, all the way to getting clients. No, in my definition, the purpose of marketing is to get selling conversations.
Wow.
That is the purpose of marketing. Then selling takes over. Marketing stops and selling takes over. Now, it's somewhat can be somewhat of an artificial thing, but let's say I get a card from a networking event and they have some interest, and I call that person and say, hey, we talked about blah, 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 and here we have Nancy on the move again.
I'm going to stop. Sorry.
I'm getting vertigo as I'm talking. Okay, so we get a card, and we follow up, and we say, hey, we met at the meeting and you seem to be interested in attracting more clients. I wonder if we could talk for a few minutes. So that's a step on the way to getting to not getting the client. Ultimately, it is a step in the long term, the bigger picture. It's a step on the way of having a selling conversation. And that first conversation is not a selling conversation. In my lingo, it's a marketing conversation. It's a part of the getting to know, getting to connect, feeling comfortable, providing information, feeling familiar. It's all of that. But at some point, that person might say, yeah, I think I'd like to see how this could help me. And then you set up a selling conversation. Now marketing is over. It's done. Now, if it doesn't go anywhere, sometimes you have to resurrect it and go back, you know, but that's sort of an exception. But once you have that selling conversation, the purpose of that conversation is to get to home plate, go around the bases, and turn that person into a client. When we understand the elements of the game, we're going to play it more effectively, as opposed to, oh, I got a card. What do I do with that? Should I wait for them to call? No, you shouldn't. So the game is played proactively, and the first aim is to get those appointments. When you think of that, okay, see, a lot of people think of it this way. The purpose of all my marketing activities is to have people contact me ready to do business with me. And if you're waiting for that, you can wait a hell of a long time for people to turn into clients. It's great when that happens. Once in a while it happens. I've been following you for a long time. I've read 5,000 of your e-zines, and I think I'm ready to get help. Pal, you have a selling conversation, you're ready to go. But usually not like that. So looking at the other things to do to get that selling conversation is so important. And we've been focusing so much up to this point. Get your materials in place. Have an article that you can send to people. Have an HEOB letter that you can give to people at the right point. Get your marketing activities geared up. You know, get out there, talk to people, meet with people, find out what the reaction is. Now, with some people in the group that are in business for a while, especially Nancy and Carol, you know, both of you are pretty busy. The process that you've been doing for years is simply been enhanced by this program. You're more aware, you're getting out there a little more. And then the whole selling process, you know, you've done it so many times, you hardly even know what's happening. It just happens, right? They say, we're kind of looking at a project. And you say, Nancy says, oh, tell me a bit about that project. What's going on with that? Oh, you're trying to accomplish this, you know? And it's not that they're buying something strange that they'd never bought before. So it's easier for people in that place. Whereas someone like Sarah, she has a service that no one out there has bought before. They're not sure what it is. They aren't sure what benefits it has. So she has to do more educating and more information and more conversations, perhaps, till she gets up to that point where people are saying, yeah. So can I tell what you told me yesterday, Sarah? Take your mic off.
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't want to, you know, but it was, she says, well, Robert, I'm getting these leads of people want to work with me, and I just don't want to call them back. I have someone that wants a proposal, and I just am not getting it done. I mean, it's sort of like we're in this place of, so we can be in strange places. People actually want to work with us, and we're not taking the bull by the horns and making it happen. But for God's sake, when someone shows interest. But look, I don't blame you for being there. I used to be there. It's like I would get a lead, and I'd call, and I'd leave a message, and they'd leave a message back, and I went, oh, my God, I have no idea what to tell that person, and I'd live in guilt for months about not following that person up. I've gone through it all. I did everything wrong 500 times. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm good at teaching this, because I know how hard it can be and all the mind stuff that goes in to say, well, I'm not sure it's good enough yet. I don't know what to say. And what if he's interested? And then, you know, et cetera. So we're on all scales of the spectrum here. So let's see. So don't wait until people follow up with you. Follow up with them. So let's say you do that. So you have to have some kind of a follow-up sequence. So really think of it as a sequence, and your sequence needs to be customized for you, but I can give the general steps that work. So can be tricky about where to start. Let's say you've got to be proactive. Let's say someone does not call you, but for whatever reason, through your marketing, you're generating potential leads. So Roberta gives a talk. Sharon has her website out there. She's not really doing a lot of outreach yet, but her website is getting close. But maybe I'll just make up some scenarios for this. So Sharon, maybe someone looked at your website, and because a past client of yours said, look at Sharon's website. I think she's got something that really might fit for you. It's unusual, but it's really powerful. That's the kind of referral you want, right, Sharon? Someone looks at your website and goes, wow, this is pretty cool. But they don't call you. For whatever reason, it's just, oh, the timing's not right, and I don't know, but then the other friend calls and said, hey, did Alice call you? I think she was interested in your work, and she told me she looked at your website. And then, so what do you do then? So there's a chance for you to say, well, would it be all right to call Alice, to connect with Alice? Oh, yeah, I think she'd be cool. So then it's like, okay, so there's a follow-up sequence, and someone that's a potential, you don't know how high they are in the hierarchy of potential, not necessarily ready to buy tomorrow, but you don't really know. So most people given that situation will do nothing. We'll wait. We want to wait to be discovered, and people go, oh, this is fantastic, and we have $500,000 share, and is that enough? And that's what we want, right? So, but that doesn't happen. So instead, you say, okay, well, I'm going to reach out. So I send an email to Alice and say, you know, our mutual friend said you point her to the website, et cetera, et cetera. And I'd love to have the chance to chat with you for just a few minutes and answer any questions you have about the work we do. So all you want is a little conversation. You're not ready to make a sale. You're not even at the selling conversation yet. It might come very soon after this, but you just want to make that connection. And people actually appreciate that. They don't appreciate, this is not what you want to do. I heard, Alice, that you were interested in one of our horse training programs. A horse training program costs $5,000 a day and has this, and that, and here's everything. People don't want that. Why? This is the audience participation part. Why? Why don't want too much too soon?
People don't like to feel sold. You know, that feels very pushy.
Yeah, they don't want to be pushed. They don't want too much information too soon either.
Overwhelming.
Can be overwhelming. So it's like, one way to think of this, if you were interested, how would you want to be approached? And it'd be kind of a low-key kind of way, right? Mm-hmm. So, but you could add your article. So you could say, so-and-so said that you might be interested, and I'd love the chance to chat with you and answer any questions you have. And by the way, I've attached a little article here about leadership and how it relates to horses. You might find that interesting. Then you would say, here are some times I'm available to talk. Something other people don't. We put it in their court. Don't put it in their court. Keep it in your court by saying, here are three times. So, for instance, Shira Jane did that the other day, and she got set up an appointment. Now, then they canceled. Then they're trying to set it up again. But it's like you're not making them take an extra step. Because otherwise, they have to look at their calendar and send it to you. That's not very considerate. Make it easy for them to contact you. Or maybe you have time trade or something like that, some system like that where you can set up an appointment, whatever you have. So then so they say, okay, great. Here we are. Let's set up a time. I'd love to talk. So that's your follow-up sequence. It's always to get that very first initial connection.
I've got a question.
Yeah.
So sometimes through the International Coach Federation has a website that lists all the accredited coach training programs. And so people write in and say, I'm interested in your coach training program. Tell me how much it costs. What's a good response to that?
Do you have a fixed price for your coaching training program, or does it depend on their needs?
Particularly where people are interested in the problem is people don't understand what they're asking. They say, I want to get the ACC credential through your program. No program gives credentials. The ICF gives credentials. And to get the credential, you need to meet these criteria. So I need to talk to you to understand what you have already. And so you're clear about it. So I can tell you what it is.
Yeah, well, maybe a simple email that says pretty much that is what you should send. You know, when people are searching for price, it's not usually a great situation. But some people, it's like, you know, that's a great sorter. I don't want something that's $50,000. I don't want something that's $100. So you could have a boilerplate type email that says, essentially, this is how it works. We provide the skills and blah, blah, blah about that particular skill. And it really depends on your background and what you've done already to this point, you know, et cetera, and what you're looking for. Because we have a different kind of program than everybody else. Everyone will say that. So the best thing is to talk to a few people and don't focus on price first. Focus on what they offer. Then talk about price.
Yeah, I actually got one of those emails this week, and I just said, but I need to understand your needs before I can provide you with a quote. So I set up a call for tomorrow.
Perfect. So that's exactly
that to me all the time.
Now even if Sarah Jane has quoted me a price for her abrasive leadership consulting thing from beginning to end, But she's also dealing with big corporations where that have huge budgets, and the exact dollar amount is not so sensitive to them. So, you know, if they're sending emails, hey, we're looking for an abrasive leadership consultant, what's your fee? You're dealing with what I call a dumb buyer. Mm-hmm. If they go for the lowest price, where according to some of her market data, it can save the company $24 million by changing that person, you know, it's kind of silly, right? Anyway, so for Leanne, Sharon, et cetera, that's what to do. So the next thing is, okay, so I've arranged a time, I've responded in such a way that they go, okay, that's cool, I'll have a conversation. So the next conversation, it can just be an initial conversation, or it might actually turn into the strategy session. You know, what I prefer to do is, you know, sometimes people just call me and say, hey, Robert, this is so-and-so, and I think I could use your services. Well, that's good, obviously. But I don't drop everything and go into a strategy session. I never do that because I'm not prepared. I haven't set up the game properly, which I'll explain in a second, so that I'm more likely to win. So I have that initial conversation by phone. And so I might say, oh, thanks so much for calling. I'd love to find out about your situation and tell you about my services. But I can't have a long conversation right now. And usually I have a longer conversation to see if there's a fit. So could I ask you just a few questions now, and then we could set up a time to talk later? And I haven't found anyone ever having a problem with that. So it would be the same if you met on the phone. Like, you might be all ready for a selling conversation. It's more like brief qualification. So the questions I would ask is, you know, what's your business? How long have you been in business? What's the basic marketing things you're doing now? What do you want to accomplish? So three or four questions like that, I'm going to know whether they're a good potential client. And I might say, yeah, I've worked with a lot of people in your situation, so there's a very good chance I could help you. Why don't we, we need a little more time, and I want to get some information from you and send you information first. Is that okay? They'll say, fine, we set up a time. And then I point them to my information about my coaching services, and I ask them to fill out a questionnaire. Now, it's like, well, why would you want to do that? They're hot, they're on the line, they're ready to buy, but I will only want to work with clients I can succeed with and that have gone through qualification steps. They always become better clients than if I don't. I've had people insist that they work with me, and we push it through. Almost always it doesn't work out. You know, I don't make it super easy to work with me. Not that I make it super hard, but I want to make sure there's a connection. So you might say this is the sort of the pre-date, you know, and then the date is the strategy session. And then the working with a client is the marriage. You can use an analogy like that.
And so, Robert, this is Sarah Jane. Robert, my clients are large corporations. They've all gone through the routine of hiring coaches.
Yeah.
So I'm having a hard time with this step number two, because when they tell me what their need is, it's really pretty clear to me whether or not I can help, et cetera, et cetera. So,
yeah. So it's not as important in your case. See, okay. Like I say, everybody's a bit different. But if they happen to call you and you're on the phone and you're right there, you might want to compose yourself and find a better time. But, you know, sometimes people we want to hire somebody today. Well, it's not ideal, but you might want to respond to that or you'll lose the job, right? But when we talk about setting up the conditions for the selling conversation, we'll come back to that in a few minutes, okay? Because sometimes you jump to that. Sometimes you do. Sometimes you have to. Okay? So, in, you know, most cases here, you know, Carol has a whole process for bringing in clients. So she has to, she meets with them, she talks with them, and they decide to work together, right? How long do you talk with people on the phone, Carol?
Oh, it could be anywhere from 5 minutes to 15, preferably, but depending on the client, it can become too long because they're so happy to talk to a therapist. They try to get a session for free over the phone. So I have to, you know, I put it out there, let's chat for like 10, 15 minutes, to try to set the boundary. But it's really interesting, the people that are kind of frantic and they want an appointment immediately and I haven't had a chance to talk with them, or even if I have, it's like, no, I have to see you today or tomorrow. I automatically don't want to work with them because I know I have done that and it doesn't work out. Yep. So it's better to do what you're saying. And it depends on the particular person. I mean, some therapists might thrive in that sort of crisis mode, but the clients aren't dependable, and it's really not good for business. And they're difficult people to work with anyhow. Even though my business, it's on a much smaller scale, I do the same thing. I mean, I do want to talk with them and make sure I am the right fit for them. They're the right fit for me. They appreciate it. And I will set up an email and all that sort of thing. I have questionnaires. So it's not a long conversation. It can be as little as 10 minutes.
People basically know what therapy is. I go in, I talk to a therapist about my problem. She gives me insights and helps me straighten things out. I mean,
although they don't know what hypnosis entails. So some people call, they really want to have that conversation. So it's important. And then I get the price thing a lot too. I'll get an email, what are your fees? And I have noticed what I do is if it's a client, my instinct is I don't want to work with them. I will just send an email quick. These are my fees. Basically, in my mind, it's take it or leave it. But if it's somebody that I think is going to be a really excellent client, I will call them, and because then I can, get a sense of, who they are and that.
So Carol, you've got a system that works. I wouldn't screw around with your system at all, but it's useful for people to see, okay, she has a system. It doesn't have to be a long appointment. It doesn't make sense for you. It just isn't needed. Whereas with, Roberta in some cases, Leanne, Nancy in some cases, Sarah Taylor for sure, it's got to be a longer conversation. It's more of an education process is the selling process. And even if it's 15 minutes, it's kind of an education process too.
Oh, definitely. And I think in my 10 years, I've had two or three people that wanted to meet me in person as the 15 minutes in-person meeting rather than over the phone. And, of course they wanted to work with me. Once I get them in the office, I got them. I know it's going to be fine, but I offer that if they're hesitant. But most people, a phone conversation is plenty. Yeah.
Well, at least you're willing to talk to somebody. When you call a doctor, they won't talk to you.
No, it's crazy.
It's very arrogant. Just come in. Well, I want to find out a little about you as a doctor. They don't understand that concept, which is why I don't like working with doctors. So
difficult.
Anyway. Okay. So where are we with this? So that's the first initial conversation in many cases, which will lead to a longer conversation. So here's the thing I want to insert. This is what everybody doesn't do. And almost nobody does this, these next two things. And I've mentioned them. I just want to open it up and get questions about it. And that is, say if they've seen your website, do you know how much material they've read on your website? If they've heard about you, how much have they heard about you? So we often assume because they called us, they know all about us and understand about our business. And in some cases, that's not true. So even with Nancy Clift, everybody knows that hires her, who is hires focus group moderators, pretty much know what focus group moderators do. But we said, well, let's differentiate yourself and educate them what really good focus group moderators do. So, Nancy, so we created that piece. You had it designed and printed at ridiculous expense. All of that. Now, you've been giving it to some people. Is it working? Is it hard to say? It's definitely not working. You don't know for sure.
I haven't had the opportunity to give it to anyone yet. I started to feel kind of silly about it, actually, after I did it. I haven't been around people.
That's the marketing guy's nightmare. No, you've got to use your material. Don't second guess yourself.
I haven't been around anybody. So that thing is probably for a different kind of a prospect than the sort of people I've been around right now.
You know what? Here's the thing. I'll bet you any amount of money that if you give it to some of your existing clients, someone will say, oh, I didn't know you did that. Oh, I didn't know that was important. See, it's a good, see, we are so stuck in what we believe. We think everybody knows it.
Yeah.
I promise you they don't, because they don't do the focus groups.
Yeah.
They hire focus group moderators and they trust they know what to do. But then you distinguish yourself somehow. So you feel embarrassed to send it to them.
Which one are we talking about? Which piece, the article or the table?
Not the table, the article.
Oh, the article. Yeah, I haven't actually used that yet either, but I will. I just have been, you know, my dad.
You're so busy getting clients.
No, my dad had a heart attack, and now I have pneumonia. It's been like, I haven't really been prospecting, but I will. I'm excited to use that one.
Okay, fine. So, when someone says their relative had a heart attack and they have pneumonia, what can you say?
Right.
Get on the dime here, you know. I mean,
I've driven to Des Moines 4 times in the last 3 weeks, which is so. But I'm excited about using it, and I've been busy anyway with work. So,
one place to use is anytime someone is a new client.
Yeah.
You know, oh, let me send you some information. Send both things. That tells you a little bit about how I work, and you know, just and then you become a little more memorable. You're attached to that piece. Whereas if someone else hasn't attached it, they don't have that connection in the mind of the buyer. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the purposes of sending information. So somebody says, okay, Robert, well, I'd like to meet. And I say, before we meet, go to this page and I'll send them a link to it. And then they read all about my services.
Yeah.
And maybe they thought I did something differently. Or usually it's like, oh, he does a lot more than I thought. He really has good insight into this, this, and that. That's really useful, mm-hmm. et cetera. And then, now, you know, you have to be sensitive for the other piece, which is the questionnaire. If you're a coach of any kind, you can get away with this, so to speak. Roberta, Leanne, myself, for sure the questionnaire works. For Sharon, well, I think a questionnaire would work, but it'd be a different kind of question. You already put the questionnaire on your site, right, Sharon? Take your
mic. It's a simple one on the contact form.
Yeah, but it asks some important information. It's
Yeah.
See, the idea for a questionnaire is, if you read that questionnaire, you should know like that if they're a good potential client or not. If you have name, phone number, email, message, there's no way you could know if they're an ideal client. So I ask a lot of things. I ask how much money they're making. I ask how much money they want to be making. I ask what kind of marketing activities they're doing now. I ask a whole bunch of questions. So when I talk to them, I know what's going on with them and their issues around marketing, so I can help them. It makes a lot of difference. So, it can work for almost anybody to have a questionnaire. So, Sarah Jane, would a questionnaire, Sarah Jane has disappeared.
No, I'm here.
Sorry about.
I'm here.
I just have a strip of people and you disappeared on me for a second. So would a questionnaire work for you? I mean, don't you have to have an intake questionnaire anyway before you start working with that client?
I ask different questions for a client who's going to be a successful leader versus an abrasive leader.
Right.
So I would rather do that on the telephone.
As opposed to a form.
As opposed to a form. And the, you know, the closest thing that I have to a questionnaire, which I guess a lot of other people have on their websites as well, is the contact me form, which right. is basically what name, rank, and serial number, and what's your issue.
Right. And as I was saying with Sharon, that's what she has, just a bit more detail about that.
Mm-hmm. And so can I ask a question and make a comment? Yeah. When you were talking to Nancy about sending her fabulous, gorgeous looking form as well as her article, yeah. what I've been doing in the last, 2 weeks since my website is now alive and living and happy, I will send somebody a link to the resource page in the website instead of a link to the article, because I want to get them into the website. Is right. that okay?
Aren't the articles on the resource page?
They are. So I say to them, here's a link to the resource page in my website, which has an article about blah, 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 and please look at this. The point that I'm asking you and trying to make is it a good idea or an overwhelming idea to get them into the website versus just sending the article?
No, I like sending them to the website. But you're sending, if you just say visit my website.
No, I'm not doing that.
Exactly. You're sending them to that page.
Yes.
And so there's an article, and then they might read other stuff on the page.
That's right.
Or they'll look and see, oh, this looks professional. This looks good. This person looks, you know, you go to some web pages and it immediately eliminates you from the running because it's looks unprofessional, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but the point is it gets them not just to the resource page, but they get a gestalt of the whole website, and then they can make a decision. Oh, I want to look at the rest of this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, her website is divided so clearly between successful leaders and abrasive leaders, a section for each of them. It's highlighted on the homepage. You know, the theme just is clear throughout. It's not 10 million things you do. It's focused. So that helps. So, yeah. What I found, one of the great benefits of the questionnaire is that it makes the selling conversation go faster and easier. Because, see, I could ask all those questions in the strategy session, right, that are in the questionnaire. But instead, I think of that as a jumping off point. So I could look at the questionnaire, and it says, you said on your questionnaire that you hate marketing more than anything else on planet Earth. I thought that was interesting. Tell me about that. So, you know, it gives me an advantage to because obviously we got to get past that for them to work with me so they could finally find marketing not to be the worst thing in the world, right? Or I see here that you've made $10,000 in the last 5 years. Maybe my services are going to be a little out of your range. Oh, I just inherited $5 million. Don't worry about it. Actually, I would. Terrible clients to work with. They don't need me. They got $5 million.
Okay.
Not that that's happened. But I, for instance, I once had a client that had an alimony of $20,000 a month. We did all this work on her business. One day she just quit. No, I don't think I want to do this anymore. She had no reason to, you know. It was a little too hard for her. Anyway.
I bought a lottery ticket today.
Well, there you go.
You may not be on the next call.
Yes. Yeah. If we send you shares, can you split it with us? We'll send you a quarter each. Okay. So anyway, you get the idea? So I find the questionnaire really to be useful. It makes me feel much more prepared to do the strategy session. And then we might talk a little bit about the strategy session today. I think I'm going to talk about it more next time because there's all kinds of things about it. So let's just have a little more conversation about this or questions about this. You know, anything that I do in this process, what you're looking at doing and how to do it better, you know, what should be included in the questionnaire or the materials, et cetera, et cetera. or anything about what we've talked about so far.
So are there sample questionnaires somewhere or?
Yeah.
Yes.
Sarah Jane, I have one on my coach.
You know, I often point people to the ones that are on my website under my services. That's a good detailed questionnaire.
Okay.
So we can access it pretty easily. We don't have to sign up for an intro call with you to access your questionnaire.
No, just go to marketing programs, and it's marketing coaching, and there's my sales letter for marketing coaching with the questionnaire at the bottom. And it's very much the same as the mastery questionnaire, very similar.
Do you have samples of the, like, I've been writing down the just your phraseology, the way you phrase things. You know, I heard from Blau you were interested in that kind of stuff. Do you have any of those email templates anywhere, just as examples?
That's a really good question. I have a lot of stuff about the marketing conversation in the club. Email templates, I don't think so much. You wouldn't want me to create those for you, would you?
Yeah, that'd be nice.
There were email templates in that thing you made us read.
which was what? I've made you read a lot of things.
What was her name? Jill? Was it the Jill Conrath stuff or whatever?
Yeah, Jill Conrath. Yes, that was the whole purpose of that. That was the email thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hey, I actually read it.
I tell you, you know, that whole thing about, you know, it's it fits into this conversation because it's like, well, how do we connect with people? Connect cold, connect warm. How do we follow up? What do we say in the emails? You must read that. It's short, it's simple, it's powerful, it's condensed, it comes from experience. She's one of the best people out there. She's my friend. I designed her first website. We go back 20 years. And I love her stuff. That's why I stole it from her. You know, that's all free available on our website. So, yeah. Read that. Even better, listen to the audio, which covers the similar thing. You can fit it in. It's not overwhelmingly long. Okay.
I think, you know, in 10 or 15 minutes, you're going to get the gist of it.
Yeah, 10 or 15 minutes.
And that's helpful.
So much to 20 minutes.
When I need the stuff, what I do is I go onto the Action Plan Marketing site and start looking. So I went looking for email templates because I had to email a client back, and right. I couldn't find them. Yeah. So that's helpful.
Well, that's why in the mastery program. Sorry, Sharon.
It's just helpful if you have, you know, this is the email conversation and here's the links to stuff. You know, some things are like that and really help. Like the website one is great.
I know. Well, that's why because you're in the mastery program, I give you more. That's why I send you things. I don't send it to you because I'm trying to take up my time and your time because I only will sell you things that I think are extremely valuable. So I don't send you a whole lot of extra stuff.
Are there links to the stuff, you know, when we go through each week's call, are there links to the stuff you send us there?
It's right there.
Because I send stuff in email all the time. I have a special bucket for you.
Yeah, well, you should go look at the site because the recording is there. Any notes for the session are there. Any extras are there as well.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, I'll put double exclamation, larger caps, bold, whatever. You must read this. No kidding.
This may sound ridiculous, but as I've been going through this program, I've been basically creating my own templates from what I've learned in the program, and they are templates, so they need to be tweaked for different situations and different clients, but the gestalt of the template is usable.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that people want is one size fits all, and it's never the case once, you know, your situation is different for selling than it is for Carol, et cetera, et cetera. But the basic principles are still under there. You know, I've been using Marketing Ball for years and I find it's, you know, incredibly robust. And You know, the first thing is to get someone's attention. And you get someone's attention only with good communication, a good message, something that, oh, that's different, that's useful, that's valuable, whatever the heck it is. And then, you know, sometimes getting up to that second base, that can be the longest part of marketing. Somebody can be on your list for a long time. You can try to get appointments for a long time. But, and this is why I say the other things of marketing, other activities of marketing, such as writing articles, giving talks, you know, doing virtual things like teleclasses, etc. You can catch people that are in your, that you've already gotten their attention, but they're not ready to work with you. So, and some that will work a lot better than others. For me, it's the technique. Get them on the list and then promote to that list. And it fills all my programs, gets all the clients I need. But that doesn't work quite as well in the corporate world. But, you know, with Sharon, you know, I had an interesting conversation with Sharon last week about, I think it's useful for you, her to write articles. I think it's useful for people to opt into her site, because here's the thing about so many services. They don't need it now, but they might need it someday. So if somebody comes to your site and they see Sharon's site with all this stuff about leadership development and horses, and it's very rich. It's really interesting. It's different. And you go, you know, maybe my team could use that at some point. But they don't need it next week. You know, they just don't, probably. But if they opt in and they get on the list and you send them an article about horses and leadership every once in a while, you know, you don't have to do it weekly like I do. You could do it monthly. You could do it quarterly, for God's sake. I mean, something, then they don't forget you. And then when the time rolls around, they're spending more time looking at the website, they're downloading an evaluation, they're whatever they're doing. At some point when they call you, they're ready to do business with you. That's the power of ongoing keep in touch marketing. Are you still on the call, Sharon? Sharon dropped off.
I'm here. No, I'm here.
Okay.
I just find corporate people don't do that very much. They don't want the stuff in their inbox. They're so 16 miles under. The people that take the stuff are people that are interested in the area of the horse and the leadership stuff, which is fine, but they're not my clients. They're just interested in the field. But yeah. It doesn't hurt.
You can never know for sure who signs up for your easing. You can never, you just can't know. So what if 1,000 people sign up and only 20 are viable clients?
Well, where it comes in handy, I think, is somebody who's interested in this stuff might send it to somebody else that they've heard, I need to do some team building. Oh, here's an article that bounced past me. I've talked to this person. I think she's great. Why don't you contact her? I get a lot of referral, and I'm thinking that maybe using the articles is a way of making referrals easier. I have lost clients because they lost my email address.
That's perfectly valid.
Like, oh, we've been looking for you for, and it's like, how can you not? Anyway. Horse sense, for heaven's sakes. It's not that hard.
Exactly. Look, people in this group say, what's your phone number? It's only on every email I've ever sent you. No, it's there. Which is better than some of the emails you send me, which there's no contact information, no phone number, no web, no nothing. Everyone should have a web signature. I know some of you do, some don't. But it's like, see, you're important to you, to other people. You're just a passing thought about something someday. So, you know, you got to be out there. You got to be visible. You got to get through.
A lot of corporate people are deliberately leaving their signature lines off of emails. And it's just regards from Robert, and that's it. And you don't
want, they don't want people to call them back.
That's exactly right. Or email them back, or know the email.
Well, if they email them, the email's there.
Yeah, but they don't
emphasize it at the bottom. I mean, all you'd have to do is reply to it. But unless there's, they'll find a way to get around that. Oh, I can't even reply to this email. No, I want it to be anonymous. I don't know. Yeah, well, you know, business is crazier than ever in that way. There's more information than ever. But does it make sense if there's more information than ever to not have any information? get what I'm saying? I mean, it's like you've got to more think of, well, what's the right information in the right place? This is something that we can talk about in another session, just ideas for blogs, e-zines, places to place content, etc. For instance, I think we may mention this. You can place your articles on LinkedIn. And you have a really good article and you have good keywords and stuff. Some people will find that. And then you can actually click on your LinkedIn followers and say, hey, I've got an article on LinkedIn. And they can look at it right there, not even on your blog. So it's easy. And there's other places where you can place your content where the right people can see it. The tricky thing is what is the right place for you? And there's no one answer for everybody. But, you know, LinkedIn is, you know, business central, you might say, so it never really hurts to have something on LinkedIn. Do people know about Medium, medium.com? It's another place that influential people place articles. And there's a rabid readership for those articles. People are looking for interesting information on all kinds of topics. You can probably find, I don't know, anything you can possibly imagine there. But if you have a really interesting article on abrasive leaders, why shouldn't it be there? It's you know, it's one of those sites like Facebook and other sites that millions and millions of people know about. So it gets a lot of view.
What's the name of it again?
It's called medium.com. And you become a member and there's no fee, and how they make money, God knows. The whole marketing model for the .com world is still beyond me in many cases. But anyway, and you can place articles there. And you can sometimes put graphics in your articles and charts and all kinds of stuff and make them look really cool. So, you know, my main channel has been my list, you know, but that's, some people don't have a list, so that's why looking outside of the list is a good idea. Now, often people at the bottom of those articles will offer something on the site. So make sure to get my article on, you know, the 7 ways mistakes you're making with abrasive leaders. And then that takes them back to the site. So you want to get them on the site. And even better, in many cases, they opt in to get that article. So now you've got them on a list.
I have a question.
Yeah.
So about backing up to follow-up. So I get referrals sometimes from doctors that I've never had a conversation with, and I don't know how they're finding me. I don't know if they're Googling and they see my website and they're giving my information out to clients. But so I have a form letter that I'm supposed to fax, but I never do. Once in a while I do, but even then I don't even know if that's enough. I feel like it's a missed opportunity that I don't do something with these doctors. And I'm not sure, like you said, to get in front of a doctor is very difficult. So when I fax this letter, I'm thinking it probably just goes right into the chart. They may not even see it. You can't call and really get a conversation. I'm just not sure what the best way is to maximize. I want to thank them for the referral and say, hey, if you have other clients that need the help with these issues, I do this too. You know, so just to let them know, just to be personal about it.
Yeah. Well, here's a possibility. If you get a first one from out of the blue.
Like I just did.
Fine. Okay. So you don't know where they came. Doesn't matter too much. Maybe one of their clients was raving about you and they, you know, and something just sticks. It's sort of like, oh, she seems good. It's kind of random. Just because they're ultra professionals doesn't mean they're not swayed by small things or connections or someone says a good word or whatever. Who knows? So you might have a standard thing to send them the first time. And that would be a cover letter. Dear doctor, thank you so much for sending so-and-so to me. I really appreciate the referral. And, you know, just thanks. And then maybe you have a one-pager that you send with that.
I have a comment.
What's that?
I have a comment. the referral yeah. might actually come from somebody in the office, a nurse practitioner, a woman at the desk. You know, it could be a lot more than just the doctor giving the name.
Yeah, you might want to call and find out where it actually came from. And look, if you say, hey, I just got a referral from your office. I wanted to thank you. Do you know where it came from? Did it come from the doctor or?
Yeah.
Or whoever. And then they, you know, find out who it is. It's true. When have you ever had a doctor that's referred you to anyone other than another doctor?
Yeah. Handwritten notes are good too. The, you know, like a note that goes into the office because maybe it's not the doctor. It's, and even if it goes into the file, the doctor actually looks at the file every time they talk.
Let's hope so.
Yeah, let's hope so.
Let's hope so. I mean, in this particular case, this client said, like, you know, Dr. Gentry, you know, she has never steered me wrong and she told me to see you. You know, it was very specific.
Okay.
So, in that particular case.
Yeah. So don't try to get an appointment with Dr. Gentry. You're both too busy to do that.
Exactly. It would be,
no, let's have coffee. Oh, it's like,
no.
But if you send them that a thank you note or letter, but if you have a one pager, here are the things that we do. We specialize in therapy, generally around these things. We work with men, women, children, and dogs. We do, that was a joke. We do hypnotherapy and blah, 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 et cetera. So they go, okay, that's what she's about.
Okay.
So crazy. I mean,
right now I have it set up as it's part a an acknowledgement that they followed up and it's a release. It's a consent form, basically a release of information. So it's very, you know, technical, medical. I don't know if maybe it should be separate from that or not. I'm just thinking out loud.
Carol, can you put some bulleted items as a part of your signature line in that follow-up letter so that everything's on one page?
Well, I have actually probably too much on that one page that would get lost.
Okay.
Anyway, I probably should redo the whole thing and maybe have the consent separate, but yeah.
What, is this consent necessary?
It's advised by basically the insurance company, but sometimes it doesn't come into play and it's a voluntary thing, based on the, you know, the client's wishes. So sometimes I get them to sign it. Basically it's a permission that I'm letting their doctor know that I'm working with them, and sometimes they'll sign it, sometimes they won't. I get everyone to sign either yes, release to my doctor, or no, don't release, and I keep it in the file. The problem is, even when they say yes, I never send them. It's just an extra step of faxing it, and it's just one of those paperwork things that doesn't get done, and it's ridiculous that I'm not doing it. I'm wondering if I should have somebody else do it.
Nice. You should.
Yeah, I was thinking about you because when you talked about it last time, I'm like, yes, right. That's what I need.
Right. You do. Right. Because when that goes by the doctor again, that reinforces again for them that you are a legitimate professional and your name comes by them again. And that it sort of reinforces for them they did the right thing by referring to you, and it makes another referral more likely.
You're right. I mean, I know I should do it. Yeah. And I don't know if this little thing I'm not doing. So okay. Maybe I'll rework my form and then.
I was going to say another possibility is to streamline it so it's all electronic. Like nowadays you have people have you sign their iPad or whatever. So you have them put in the email for the doctor and the, you know, or whatever. And then you don't have to do any faxing or futzing with paper. It's all.
Can you do that? Do you know? Is it legal?
I'm not.
HIPAA.
Yeah, well, I don't have electronic records set up.
Okay, we're getting a little more we're getting a little more technical than we need to. We're
okay, but electronic signatures are legal.
Yeah. They are.
For sure.
That's true.
Yeah.
So, you know, follow through. You know, when a doctor sends you to someone, they'll often say, this is a really good person. She can really help you, you know? And they like to know that they could help by sending someone. So your acknowledgement of that creates a virtuous circle for that. That doctor could literally send you dozens of clients over his career and your career. So going a little extra mile and taking 5 minutes to fax.
I know.
Okay. So stop the excuses. Just do it.
And we want you to be accountable. So put it on your list when you email.
Yes. Do something.
Okay.
Okay. So to sum it up.
Sum it up.
It's about proactive follow-up. Getting a conversation and, you know, sending the right information so that you can land in a really good selling conversation that has a high conversion rate. The people that don't get the sale rush it too fast, don't send enough information, tell too much, don't listen enough. We'll be talking more about that as we go. You know, if you have all the details about your services on that HEOB letter or page, then you can save a heck of a lot of time in the sales process. Mostly you're just asking good questions. That's a good selling process. So the only person who hasn't chipped in today, he's listening faithfully, though, is Udo. Hi, Udo.
Hi.
Do you have anything to say or share?
Well, I'm taking a lot of notes today.
Okay, good. All right. And we have to set up an appointment, right?
Right.
Okay, so after this is over, stay on the line for a minute, okay?
Okay.
And we'll find a time to meet. Okay, I think that's it for now. So thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
And I'll take a look at the threaded conversation in the support system, and maybe we can start adding that. Okay. And Sharon, are you going to meet with me after this meeting or not?
No, I'm heading into Toronto. I'm
going to. And she just disappeared like a lightning bug. So, well, I'll figure. Okay, that's it, guys. Thank you so much, and stay on the line, Udo.
Bye.
Okay. Bye.